Hello, friends. Welcome once again to R&R Saturdays, where we rest and restore and relax our hearts and minds that may have been broken or anxious in the past week. Today, I'm so happy and blessed to share with you a good friend that I met in Gawad Kalinga. I was working then, and he was a volunteer there. So friends meet Luke Cook.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone. if it's okay, can you introduce yourself to them?
Yeah, so I'm Luke. I was from Australia. I'm currently based in Canada, but I'm a musician and an educator. They're my primary roles. And I guess through many years, have dealt with like a lot of different paths, like working with Gawad Kalinga or working in different schools or different countries. Traveling a lot, but yeah, I'm a musician at heart more than anything.
What brought you to Canada, Luke, during this time of the pandemic? How did you find yourself there?
So I was in a relationship. I was living in the UK first. Okay. So I went from Australia to the UK 6 years ago. I was living there, and then a whole range of things happened. I don't know if we want to talk about that side of things. Do we want to touch that side?
I don't know if you want to share. That's all right.
Sure. Okay. So
if it's okay, if you're comfortable.
Yeah. So I guess I'll give you the short version. I was engaged, and we were living in the UK, and then I guess there was a whole range of things that kind of led me to make the decision to break off the engagement. So once that happened, I left the UK. Mm-hmm. I came to Canada for, I didn't even know why. I just needed to get out of the UK.
To find yourself.
Yeah. To work out what was happening, to be in a different atmosphere, to be able to think clearly. And then the pandemic hit. So, I flew back to Australia during the pandemic. And I think when I got back home, I was around family and friends, people I hadn't seen for quite a while, which was great. But at the same time, I needed that. I needed to that aloneness, that quietness, that stillness to go back to working things out. Because, you know, to be engaged to someone and then for it to stop, there's quite a lot to process. And just with life in general, plus the pandemic. So I got offered a job here in Canada. So I decided to fly back in the middle of the pandemic. And yeah, I've been here for going on 10 months now.
I just want to ask Luke, actually, I'm just curious, how do men heal from a broken heart?
Yeah, so I remember someone telling me, like I remember someone saying this a long time ago, and I remember thinking, oh, that's, you know, not a thing. Someone saying that when two people break up, the guy feels okay quite quickly. Mm-hmm. Or he thinks he's okay when it happens. Mm-hmm. And the girl feels the pain quite instantly. Then she heals quicker, and then the guy realizes what's happened and feels the pain. And I remember when someone said it to me, I remember thinking, no, like I would like to think I'm quite switched on and mm-hmm. like tuned in to my emotions, but that's exactly what happened. So mm-hmm. when I made the decision, I was okay with it. Of course, there was pain, but I was like, okay, this is the right decision. What's my next move kind of thing. And it wasn't until maybe about 4 or 5 months later, that's when it really hit. I was like, oh my gosh, like, what have I done? And what am I doing? And who am I? Like, everything just came rushing. So I can't speak for all guys, but I think for me, I was brought up in a way that it was never looked down upon to cry, to ask questions, to share things with people that you trust. So for me, it was a lot of that. It was a lot of feeling I was okay, going to bed, crying about it, and then talking to friends that I trusted, not so much to check if I had done the right thing, but more so just so I knew there was an outlet. Because as much as I wanted the alone time, I needed every now and then just to bounce something off another human.
Your feelings.
Yeah.
So men really do cry. So it's true.
I hope so. I find it odd when I meet guys who are very like, no, like no emotion, but it's in there. They just don't want to let it out. But I was brought up in a household where the opposite was the norm, which I'm grateful for, because I think if I had have held on to it and not let it go as freely as I did to just deal with the emotions as they came, I think I'd still be distraught now. I'd still be kind of keeping them inside.
What brought you to that decision? I remember a woman asking me, do men really break off without remorse? Because I see that men actually decide very quickly, or not quickly, but they think about that decision very long. And when they decide to cut it off, it's very swift. So to women, it's like there's no remorse. But probably you've probably thought about that for a long time until that moment.
I think, again, I can only speak for me, but I think maybe why it comes across without remorse, maybe even in my own scenario, is because I think for me, it was a case of, I want to say this as clearly and concisely and as compassionately as possible, but the quicker I make this, the less painful it'll be.
I understand. Okay.
But I think that's a male-female thing. Like, I think some people want to sit down and kind of go over it for quite a while. So, I think most guys are like, if I cut it, it's not that I don't care. It's that I don't want you to see me deal with it afterwards.
So for you, it's also like charitable to cut it off quickly because you don't want it to prolong or to hurt the woman longer.
Yeah, I think I don't think there's a necessarily right or wrong way, but I think if you're really in love with someone, then you'll try to find, it's almost like, you know, the quickest point from A to B is always a straight line. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if you start to maybe hint it and not quite say what you mean, but start to throw crumbs out of what's going to happen, I think that's worse. For me, I think that's worse.
Or worse, pushing the person away or
giving
treatment. Just a back context. Luke was in a relationship for 17 years, right? That was 17.
Yeah.
Most of your life. Growing up, that must have been really tough. How did you heal from that? How did you heal from not spending that much time with the same person
anymore? I think I'm still healing, but I think there's a whole range of steps, I think, but
mm-hmm. What helped I guess you, like the things that helped you personally to move on?
I think it's really important. The one thing I've always had, and again, I think it's because of the way I grew up and the things I've done throughout life, mm-hmm. I've always known that priority number one has to be me. Not in the sense of I'll push anyone away to make sure I'm okay, but in the sense of if I'm 100% or as close to 100% as possible, then I know I'm good for anyone that is around me. So I think the minute it all happened and then I realized I was not the 100% that I was used to being, there came a point where I had to decide, okay, who am I going to be now without this person that I've been with for so long? Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm drastically different now than I was when I was in a relationship, but the feeling of it is very different because we were together since I was in high school. Like, I'm 35 now. Mm-hmm. We were together for 17 years, so there was a lot of back and forth of, have I done the right thing? Should I go back? Should I not go back? Should I try heal it? Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of those things. But something kept pushing me towards the, you need to move on with how you are now. And I think there was only really two choices. It was either keep going to bed crying and you know, the day the sun rises and the sun sets every day and you don't even know what happened that day, or you start taking advantage of the time you now have. And I think eventually, after a long amount of time, my brain kind of clicked and said, okay, enough's enough. You know, like that love is always going to be there. That memory's always there. I have nothing bad to say about the relationship, about the person. It's beautiful. It's not something that I hear a lot of people say when they break up. They want to rip it from their head and they want to throw it away. And it's quite the opposite for me, which I guess is maybe where the pain is, this balance of pain and no pain, of it's always there. But I know that it made me who I am now. And I was lucky enough to have someone to travel 17 years with, where some people don't have anyone or they have multiple people over 17 years. I was lucky that I had one.
Beautiful. They say that one way to move on is to be grateful for the memories and what happened between you and to surrender that. How did you pick up your self-look? Thank you for being vulnerable.
Oh, that's okay.
I really appreciate it. How did you pick up yourself from that and then moving to another country without knowing anyone and then being stuck in a pandemic for a year alone while nursing a broken heart? So how did you survive?
So I think, there's lots of ways, but one of the ways,
let us know what you felt when you were stuck there for a year, and then how you moved forward from that feeling.
Okay, so I think when I left Australia and I came to Canada, like back to Canada, we went straight into a 9 month, what ended up being 9 months of straight lockdown.
Yeah.
I didn't really know anyone here. It was just, I landed in the place that I'm in now, and it was basically me and these four walls for 9 months. And it was during winter, so Canadian winter, snow, very cold. Yeah.
Oh my
and then God. There was a that was the time where it really hit. Because once you're alone and you just have your own thoughts, you can either deal with them or find a way to not deal with them. So I decided to deal with them. There was a lot of feeling of regret at first. What have I done? Have I ruined my life? Have I just thrown my one chance of being happy away? And then I realized that a lot of that was kind of based on fear rather than what I logically knew. So there was probably about 3 or 4 months where I'd never suffered depression before in my life in 35 years, thank God. But this was the first time that I did. And I didn't really notice it. It kind of crept in. And then before I knew it, it was days of staying in bed, not eating, like moving from the bed to the couch, and then just kind of sitting there for the day. Nothing productive, nothing meaningful, essentially. And the thing that was keeping me doing that was this like self-pity, if I, for lack of better words. And like I mentioned, it came to that point where I was like, I have one of two choices now. It's either I live in this self-pity and be a person that I know I've never been, or I shift out of it. At the time, I didn't know how to shift out of it. I didn't even know what that meant. I just knew that I had to shift out of it. So I ended up doing a lot of things. I ended up writing down in a journal. I ended up meditating. I ended up even just looking back on photos from like including those 17 years, not for the sake of like, oh no, look what I've lost, but at looking at it in a way of look at all the things that I've done, to like reassure myself of like, you're not this person who sits on a couch all day. You're not this person who stays in bed all day. You're someone who has done all these things. So that kind of jumped me into this, I don't know what you'd call it, a an exercise, I guess is what you would call it, okay, of contemplation, mm-hmm, where I essentially imagined myself at my deathbed. And obviously anyone can, you can imagine it a multitude of ways, but I just kind of imagined myself at my deathbed and had to think to myself at that point, when that's kind of the equalizer for everyone, right? No matter what happens, we're all going to end up at that point. So like at that point, everyone must look back, just like I look back through my photos, etc., and think, did I do the things I wanted to do? Did I become the person I was meant to become? Did I reach my potential? What did I want to be? And what am I actually? So I thought of myself on my deathbed, and I had to think of, what are the things that I want to leave? Like, it's not about relationships, it's not about anything else. What do I want to leave here on this planet with whoever it is that I'm going to interact with? And it was quite quite confronting. I had to kind of stop and start it multiple times. The first time I did it, I was like, okay, I'm in the hospital, I'm sick from whatever, I'm dying, and my parents are there. And then I had to think, I'm like, oh no, my parents won't be there. You know, even that was like already a jolt to my mind. It's like, oh, if they've left Earth already, how did I leave them? Like, what did they leave thinking of me? So instantly it was like my parents were already out of the picture. Then I had to think, okay, my sisters, my friends, my family. And I think that's what made me realize what actually matters, where I want to put my efforts now. If I don't get to put it into a relationship, that's fine. If I do, that's fine. Either way, what's the thing I'm going to leave? And yeah, that's kind of what helped me slowly move out of that state of depression into like this active, okay, you know, maybe by 50, I want to do this, or I know that I want people to see me as this, or I want to leave this mark on the people that I interact with. And surprisingly, none of it had to do with career and money and cars and even relationships, ironically.
So what did you want to do?
So now,
let's pause that for a moment so you can think about it. For our listeners, so look, you went into an activity where you sat down and you thought about yourself in your deathbed, and mm-hmm, so instead of looking back, you looked ahead and then looked back into your life. So you're 35 now, so you thought about your deathbed probably 80, 90, 100,
yeah,
and then looking back, and you only had just those decades left, and you thought about, what would I want to be on this earth when I die? That's what, yeah, that was the question. And that woke you up from the depression, because
yeah,
now you had something to look forward to and had something to do with your life, and that there was more to that life than the love life and what you've lost, that your life, yep, was ahead of you. Okay. So so now what did you want to do? What are your plans for the future?
I think the way I got to what I want to do was a part of that exercise, mm-hmm, is recognizing, because all of us have like a natural tendency, mm-hmm, to say, okay, so I want to, because we're always looking from where we are now, right? So like, I'm 35. In 5 years, what do I want to do? Like, quite often when people ask you to plan your life, they'll say in 5 years. It's always future based. It's very rare that you look from hindsight, yeah, even though you're not actually there. Mm-hmm. And I think that instantly puts a different spin on things, because one, it feels like it shortens time. Like if I'm 35 and someone says, oh, you're going to die at 95. 60 years sounds like a long time. But if I think of my first 35 years plus another 25, that's 60 years already. That's not that much. Like, mm-hmm, I can remember my last 35 years for the most part. So instantly you start, part of the exercise is recognizing what your brain or what you thought you needed to achieve. Some of those things will stay just naturally because they're things that you want to do, or it's your purpose, or you're passionate about it. But there's a lot of things that end up dropping away, particularly things like stresses or current stresses, like the pandemic, for example. You know, everyone's like, oh my gosh, I'm in lockdown for 9 months. And all of a sudden, it's like, it's not that bad. It's funny, like when everyone was working and before the pandemic, everyone's like, I just want time alone. I just want to rest. And then we got it. And everyone's like, I don't want to do this. It's quite odd. So I think for me, once everything dropped away, once I realized what was important, the number one thing for me was to reach my potential, not as a musician, not as an educator, not as someone who loves culture, but just as a person. So to make sure that things like empathy were always turning into compassion, things like any chance to give, that opportunity was taken, any chance to help, then I should help. Because everything else can be done around that anyway. Like if I want to be a billionaire, I can be a billionaire and still do those things. I don't want to be a billionaire, but if I wanted to. So for me, that was priority number one. And I think I always knew that deep down, but because when you're in a relationship, it's just natural to kind of just, especially for 17 years, you can just kind of float along and you're like, oh yeah, I'm reaching my potential and I'm meeting my purpose, but you don't have to think about it that much because if you're not pulling someone, then someone's pulling you. Either way, you're moving forward. So that was priority number one for me now. It's realizing who I am and how far I can push that is priority number one. Priority number two is where what I do comes into play. So I'm a musician. And I'm also an educator. So I spent the last 5 years teaching at a university in the UK. So for me, it was like, okay, I need to, if I'm going to be this empathetic and caring and giving, the only tool I've ever known ever has been music. That's always what I've done. So for me, it's doing it through music now, finding different avenues, things maybe I haven't looked at before, working with musicians from around the world that I haven't worked with before, and finding ways to bring the same insight that I had, that many people have had, not just me, with music as the vehicle. So that's, yeah, I guess in a summary, that's kind of where I'm at now. That's where that exercise kind of led me to.
So if I would deduce big word, your what you got from that exercise is first, it brought you back to who you are, or asked the question, who am I apart from this relationship, and what is my purpose, or what do I have that I can share or still want to share with the world as a legacy, something like that. And you mentioned potential connected to your identity as who you are. What does potential look like to you? What is fullness of potential, if I may ask?
I think for me, it's, I realized maybe a while ago, even before this exercise, that what we get told, we have to make our goals to be whatever it is, a degree, a job, a house, an income, etc. I realize like a lot of us need those things. All of us need those things, food to survive. But somehow, somewhere along the line, I think as a society, as a whole, we've started to think those things are our purpose. Mm. So if I reach this, then I've reached my purpose, or even worse, I've reached my potential. Mm. And logically, I had to kind of step away from it and just think, just pure logic. If someone's meant to live for 80 years, 90 years, or 20 years, whatever it is, there's no way their purpose can be a degree. Like there's just no way that their purpose can be their job. even if someone said, I want to be a doctor and save as many people who can't afford healthcare as possible, their purpose is not to be a doctor. Their purpose is to save as many people as possible. It just happens to be through being a doctor. I think there's like a, there's definitely a hierarchy between your titles and the letters that go after your name to your actions. Because there's a lot of smart people in the world. Like there's a lot of PhDs. The one thing I remember when I did the exercise, when I got to my deathbed, no one asked me, nor did I want to say, oh, but don't forget, guys, I have two postgrads. You know, I've studied here. No, like that, that just, it didn't matter anymore. And that's not to say that no one should do them. Of course, you should do the things that you're passionate about, but your purpose, those things become a vehicle to your purpose. So if I had to, in a nutshell, talk about like what is full a fulfillment of potential mean, I think for everyone, it's somewhat the same. It's, I think it's compassion, which I think is something we've also lost a lot of in the world. I think there's a lot of pity, and there's a lot of maybe even empathy, but there's very little compassion. And when I say that, I think of pity as something that's like almost looking down on someone. You know, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy kind of words, with no action. Empathy literally translates to in feelings. So you're just in the feeling with someone. But again, there's no action. It's like, I personally am highly empathetic. So if I see, like when I worked at Gawad Kalinga, like going into villages and seeing kids and hearing stories, like every day was this emotional roller coaster. But even then, my empathy just means I can somewhat understand where they're coming from, but I don't have to act on it. Compassion literally means to suffer with, like the origins of the word translate to suffer with, which means that now you're in with these people, like you're in, whoever those people are, you're in with them now. You're not looking at them from a separate point of view. If I'm looking at someone starving, if I'm looking at someone who is struggling to pay a bill, if you're thinking of not third world situations, that person is me. Because if I want to be compassionate, I have to be in it with them. I have to actively be helping them somehow. That doesn't mean throwing money at them, but I have to be helping. So for me, that's full potential. It's recognizing yourself in everyone that you pass. And judgment should be the last thing. Well, it shouldn't even be on the list, but if it is on your list, it should be the last thing on the list.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Luke. Compassion is suffering with, and also knowing that you see yourself in the other person. I just remember this quote about be kind to everyone you meet because everyone is going through their own battle. You can't also give what you don't have, so you have to have self-compassion also. I think when you are compassionate with yourself, you learn to also be compassionate with another person because you understand. I understand what you're going through. I just wanted to mention, it's good that you mentioned about the difference between a vehicle and a purpose. I learned this from Brother Bo about the difference between purpose and path. So the purpose is, your path is can be the career, for, say, as you mentioned about the doctor, but his purpose is about saving lives. That's the real purpose. So the path can change, whatever expression that will form, either you're still in the hospital or you have your own clinic or you just you teach. So that path can change, but your purpose remains the same, which is to save lives. So in whatever form that is expressed, that's who you are supposed to be in the world.
Yeah.
So your potential, as you mentioned, is going back to our topic as being compassionate, first to yourself. How were you compassionate to yourself as you were going through this healing and continuous healing journey of your heart?
I think ironically for me, like I said, I've been very lucky that I've never had to really, well, no situation that stands out for me anyway. I've never really had to be compassionate, overly compassionate to myself.
Yeah.
I think because I've always had a really loving family. I had a great relationship. I have great friends. So I always felt I could just be me. If anything, I had a lot to give because I had this strong support system. That's partially why I ended up living in the Philippines, working with Gawad Kalinga. Like I didn't need anything for myself, is how I felt. And how I normally, most of the time do feel that way. But when this happened, it took me a while to realize that I had experienced compassion so many times without fully recognizing it. Even though I had spoken about it before, as an example, I remember living in Davao for a little bit. I was working in a GK village there, and I was living with this Lola. It was just her in a GK house. And I remember getting there and they're like, okay, this is your house. I was like, okay, I'm staying with her. And then I remember we were building all day. We were digging a septic tank and it was hot. I was, sweaty as you are in the Philippines. And then I remember getting back home and dinner being ready. And I remember eating with her, and I don't speak a lot of Tagalog, so it was already hard. And I remember us going to bed and she said, okay, you're going to sleep in here and I'll sleep here. And she just pointed to, like, it was just a bamboo couch was what she was going to sleep on. And I went into the room because it had a curtain, and I went in and there was like every pillow, every cushion that you could imagine was in this room. Like it was insane. I had more pillows than anyone could ever need. And even then, I remember thinking, and we learn it in GK straight away, like, don't think you're coming there only to help one way. There's a lot to come the other way. So don't shut off to that. Mm-hmm. Ironically, when I was trying to be compassionate to myself throughout this, all those memories started to come back of how people had been compassionate to me, how I had tried to be compassionate. And then it was really odd. I remember looking kind of at myself, like as if I wasn't me, and thinking, like, who is this person that's just beating themselves up? Like, who's just constantly, anytime you even allow yourself to be happy or to have a glimpse of just peace, instantly it's like, oh, but you've ruined your life and you're this and you're in Canada in the middle of a pandemic. It was just constantly looking for faults, which has never been me. And I think the minute I realized that, of like, who I didn't even know who I was looking at. Like, who is this person? At that point, that was also part of the trigger of enough's enough. So at the very least, I owe it to myself to be compassionate to myself. And that could be as simple as making sure I ate breakfast that day. Like, it was it was little things. It wasn't big things. Making sure I went out for a walk after winter finished. Little things like that. And I very quickly fell back into, oh, you're that guy. You're the guy that can deal with all these things. You're the guy that is compassionate to himself and to anyone you pass. But I had strayed from that for quite a while. Not that it was a bad thing, but it was a needed transition. But in a weird way, I think all the things I had done in life up until that point, that's where the payoff was. Like, if I needed them at any time in my life, it was in that moment. And luckily, I think I've been around a lot of compassionate people that it had to come up out of me at some point. It's too innate. It's too built in for it to not. But I can fully understand why people would constantly push that down, to feel bad, to keep themselves in that state of just of pain.
Why do you think so?
I think I think it's lack of understanding our purpose, of understanding our potential. I think it's fear of our potential. I think we're told that if you've been in a relationship, even outside of relationships, just in general, if you've left the job that your parents wanted you to stay in, or if you've studied an area that your parents didn't want you to study, or you marry the person that everyone didn't want you to marry, whatever it is, we instantly go into this mindset of, okay, I'm happy to do that, but I also have to punish myself for it, which is really weird. And I think it's a way of us trying to show those people, like, I'll suffer for it, I just want you still here. You know, like when I came to Canada, of course, all my family and friends were like, why are you leaving in the middle of a pandemic? Like, this is insane. I'm always up for insane things, so for me it was normal. But I remember getting here and thinking, I think that was part of it, of like, I'm not meant to feel good because people told me I'm not meant to be here. Mm-hmm. Or I'm not meant to be compassionate yet, because I still have a little bit more pity to give myself and to feel bad about. Like, as if you're waiting for someone to say, okay, you can feel good now. Mm-hmm. And ironically, the only person who can do that is you. So I think it's, I think it's fear of potential.
Yeah, and also you give your permission, yourself permission to be happy, because it's not the other people's, well, it's your life and you are responsible for your own happiness. And I felt like you were also stopping yourself from being happy because of what other people said, that why are you here? Why are you there? So you were picking up their fear. You stopped yourself from being happy. And they mean well. They're just cautious.
Oh, yeah.
Just looking after you. I guess it's just their intention is to take care of you. They want to protect you. But it's maybe coming from fear. So we need to go back to love. And I love what you said about Lola, when you remembered her memory and you remembered that you were loved.
Yeah.
So the way to also move forward and to heal is to remember the times that you were loved. Because when you're alone, you feel like nobody loves me.
Yeah.
Everyone left me. I have no one now. Pero when you remember those memories, those moments when you were loved, you know that you are loved. And those things are just lies of the enemy telling you these things that no one cares, but yes, so many people care about you. It's just that you're alone at the moment. So remember that you are loved. And what I got from you also, when you said that when you started serving, the love, you were there to give the love, but you actually received love.
Yeah,
that was my experience too when I was offline for 6 months and I was healing also. And I was invited to this to give a recollection, but I felt I did not anymore have anything to give because I was going to facilitate it. But I still said yes. And when I went there, so I just gave what I could, but I received so much more from the students, and I felt the love that was lacking. So it's true what they say: when you give love, you receive love 1,000-fold more. So I guess what I got from you, Luke, is to remember who you are, remember your purpose, and remember that you are loved, so that you can go back to love, loving yourself, and then eventually loving others.
I think that's our most natural state.
Yeah, we were made for love. I guess that's our ultimate purpose. That's why when you are not loving, you feel empty. And that starts with also loving first. Loving yourself and your God, if you believe in one and a higher power.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's I don't know why, but just as humans, like, we tend to hold on to everything. Like, love seems to be quite easy to give away, like to throw away, sorry, in the sense of like when we're in states of sadness or pity or depression or any of those things. It's we're happy to grab on to like money, we're happy to grab on to jobs and let them take us wherever they want. But for some reason, I honestly believe it's because our potential is like seated in love. I think a lot of us know that if we grab onto love, we're going to go for a ride that just a lot of people are scared of because of how amazing it is, not because they're scared for any other reason. And, you know, it's quite scary when someone says, I know your potential. The question is, do you want to know it?
Mm-hmm. Or do you want to fulfill? Maybe, especially for men, the question is, they always ask, do I have what it takes to fulfill that potential? But when you think about your main purpose is to love, yes, you have what it takes to love.
Yeah.
Yes, you do. So that potential is really fully loving. And in what ways that love is expressed, that's your discovery. So that's how you discover it. Yes.
Yeah, I read something recently and then kind of turned it into my own, like for my own thoughts, so it made sense. But like, you know, the Olympics was recently on and I saw Philippines won 3 gold, right?
Yes.
Gold,
2 silver.
Oh, 1 gold. From what I okay. Know, yeah. And the gold was in weightlifting, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think I was reading, she had competed the last Olympics, the last 2 Olympics, and she hadn't won. And I remember like using that as an example. I think a lot of us might practice, if we look at a 24-hour day, for example, a lot of us might practice love for like, let's just say, let's be generous and say 2 hours out of 24. And then we expect that to sustain us for the other 22 hours where the chaos, the stress, the everything else of life is there. And I was thinking of like Olympians, and it's the other way around. They don't do something for 2 hours in hope to win the 22 hours. So they don't train for 2 weeks in hope to win the Olympics. They train for 4 years in hope to lift one lift. And that when you look at that one moment, it's over in, for weightlifting, it's over in less than like 10 seconds. So it's this idea of like, I think maybe we've got things switched around the wrong way. Mm-hmm. If it's love, if it's whatever it is, your purpose, your passion and your potential, mm-hmm. that's your 22 hours, if not 24 hours a day, but at least 22 hours a day. So when the 2 hours comes up,
you're sleeping in the 2 hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, because that makes sense. You train for a long time. So when that moment comes up, you can deal with it. Like, I saw a lot of people in GK, like after GK, people questioning life because I've been confronted with this level of living and culture and a whole range of things that I hadn't seen before. For me, luckily, I came from where I feel like I had my 22 hours of training going into that. So I knew how to deal with it. But I watched a lot of people just be like, what is my life even about? Like, which is good, which is a healthy thing. But I think that's why it's that difference between doing something for a short amount of time in hope that it'll fulfill the rest of your day, or it's just simply filling the rest of your day with it, knowing it'll fulfill the rest, like the smaller portion of the day. And then spread that across 95 years. When you look back on your deathbed, it looks great if that's the approach.
So what you're saying is, spending most of your time fulfilling your purpose and your purpose and your potential.
And it's super hard.
Super hard. But if you take it moment by moment, I guess, if you break it down into easy steps, like you said earlier, I love what you said when you did your self-compassion activities, as simple as making sure you eat breakfast.
Yeah.
If you can walk, under the sun, that helps you also. So when you give to yourself, you can also give to others, because not resentfully, because you're able to take care of your own needs. Look, thank you so much. A message for anyone suffering from a broken heart and suffering from depression or anxiety, or just make those that are feeling alone right now, and message for them?
We love you, I can tell you that much. I think the one thing to remember is if you can experience it, like if you're experiencing those things now, that instantly logically means that thing is not you. That thing is separate from you.
With your experience, that experience.
Yeah, like when I experience sadness, Luke is not sadness. I am not sadness, but I am experiencing this thing. And the good thing to remember is if it's external from you, then it has to end. It can't be constant. Like the only reason why God is forever and no time, no limits, no nothing, is because his love. It's the only reason why, more than anything. So anyone who's going through any sort of hardship, if you can tell yourself, or not even tell yourself, just look at your situation and ask, is this thing external from me? If it is, all you have to do is be compassionate to yourself and just let time do its thing. And then slowly, actively do little things for yourself. And they're not selfish. Mm-hmm. If you're building yourself to love, there's nothing selfish that you can do.
You're being compassionate and loving yourself. I think it's also the best time to connect back to the source of love, as you mentioned, that God is love. And so right now, parang building that relationship again with the Lord, with God, who is love, can help fill your love tank, fill what is lacking or empty, so that when you get to know God again, he will help you get to know yourself again and bring you back on track, because he made you for love, and so you can love again, starting with yourself and with him. So yun, So how are you now? How's your heart?
I'm good. My heart's full.
Are you ready to love again? So I'm kidding.
I don't know.
But take your time. I like what you said about time heals all wounds also. Take the time. Take the time you need.
Yeah, and as long as...
It's good also that you're not jumping from one relationship to the next, just to, you know, escape the pain, because that will also not end in a good way. You're just hurting another person. So just take the time to heal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think once you feel yourself come out of that enough, mm-hmm. I think it's on all of us to just actively decide to do these things. Like, love doesn't just come out of us. Like, we have to decide to do these things. I think there's a lot of waiting and expecting. Mm-hmm. Waiting and expecting doesn't get anyone anything. You know, it's got to be people who are actively deciding, this is what my day is going to be. This is what my 22 hours is going to be dedicated to. And your job and your family and your relationships, that's what flavors your day. But if the constant through it is your potential, then your day is going to be good no matter what happens.
The potential, which is to love.
Mm.
So based on whatever, on your relationships and your gifts. Mm-hmm. Expressing it through that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much, Luke. I was going to mention something about also one thing for me that helped also was to serve others. So when I wasn't thinking too much about my pain, and then started to look after, I guess that's what you're talking about, of compassion, looking after other people's pain and helping them. That healed me, because when you give love, you also receive the love that you need. So love keeps on giving. That's true. So whatever that was mentioned here, that would probably pick one that you can do this week that mm-hmm. will help you move forward. And then you can do another one the next time, as you keep on stepping one foot over the other and keep moving forward until you become whole again. But you don't have to stop loving, because you can start by loving yourself.
Yeah.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you for this wonderful conversation.
Thank
God bless everyone. See you again in the next RNR.